First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Duval County Public Schools issues a mask mandate for students, even though the governor says he'll ban that and even defund districts. Meanwhile, cases of COVID and hospitalizations are pushing our local hospitals to the breaking point, just as people wait weeks to get a COVID test. It's all one big story this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Give us a call now, 549-2937. Then later, restaurants have had a terrible time in this pandemic, but they are battling through and even opening new ventures. We'll check in on one in Atlantic Beach, part of our culinary tour of the area that we continue from time to time here on the show. First, though, let's get to the news. We're so pleased to welcome an all-star panel as we talk about this health crisis in Greater Jacksonville, beginning with Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union. Hi, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. Writer-journalist Claire Goforth back with us again. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Duval.
Good morning. And rounding out our panel, a first-time guest, we're pleased to welcome Ben Becker of Action News Jax. Hi, Ben.
Good morning, Melissa. I don't know about being an all-star, but I'll do my best.
You'll do great. And let me mention to folks that you can listen on the radio, you can call us up, and you can also watch our live video stream right now of today's show on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, also on WJCT's YouTube page, and on our website. We'll even put it up at PBS Jax Passport for subscribers on demand later today. As we talk about the COVID crisis in our area, we want your calls, 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page where you can watch our video stream and see the bright, shining faces of our panelists. You can comment there too. Okay, let's begin with the big news of the week. Four Florida school districts this week, including Duval and Alachua counties, say they're going to work around the governor's executive order banning them from requiring students to wear masks as they go back to school this month. Basically, this came after an incredibly intense push by parents and teachers and also prominent local pediatricians lobbying the school district to protect students with a mask mandate. In Duval County, parents who don't want to mask up their children can do an opt-out form. At least one local district, St. John's County, still says they will keep masks optional, despite a new group in that county of concerned parents. Now, as we go to air, the Florida Board of Education is going to meet in a couple of hours to consider two emergency rules for schools. In light of all this, we haven't seen either rule posted yet online, but there has been a lot of talk about a proposed voucher for parents who want to avoid masking their children. In effect, the state would give parents a voucher to send their child to another school through the state's Hope Scholarship Voucher Program. That was originally set up to give vouchers to kids who have been bullied and wanted to escape a learning environment they didn't like. So there is so much to get into here, and we want your calls. Let us know your thoughts about all of this, especially parents and teachers. Call us up right now, 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page, as always, is open. Nate Monroe, let's begin with you. The governor had threatened to defund districts that defied him on masking up students. This new position seems like a bit of a retreat, saying now that basically if parents have some way to opt out of putting masks on their children, the state may not follow through on the threat of defunding. We'll have to see what happens, though, right, Nate, at the Board of Ed meeting today.
Yeah, I mean, if this is the extent of the kind of rulemaking that we're going to see that stemming from the governor's executive order, then there is no question this is a massive retreat from the kind of thundering rhetoric that the governor has had about schools issuing mask mandates. I mean, this voucher plan, definitely bad policy and just kind of performative silliness, but also probably close to irrelevant. I mean, we are like 4 days away from the start of school. The number of parents who are going to go through the rigmarole to move their kid to an entirely different school just because of masks. I suppose I'm willing to, you know, I'm open-minded to the idea my assumption's wrong, but I think that that number is going to be negligible.
Right. I mean, this, Claire Goforth, this puts the onus on parents to go through an additional layer of paperwork. And they also would have to do the research to remove their child from their neighborhood school or their whatever school they're in and find a new school for their kid if they feel strongly enough that they don't want their child to wear a mask. You know, this is just an extraordinary situation. And I realize that parents feel strongly about this on both sides. And certainly the Duval County School Board heard from both sides of the argument. But it was a decisive vote in Duval, 5-2, that masks will be mandated. We'll have to see how many parents do opt out of that. But just speaking anecdotally, I need to disclose, we still have one child in the Duval County Public Schools at Douglas Anderson, and she has told me that all of her friends were planning to stay masked up before any of this even happened. So next week's going to be interesting, Claire.
It is. You know, we're going to see continued political games being played with children, as the governor has been doing all week. And it has been very effective for him, quite frankly. While he is starting to see some of his poll numbers flag against candidates such as Charlie Crist and Nikki Fried, within his base, he's doing great. People love him. I mean, I monitor the far right quite extensively. And just this morning, I was looking on Telegram, where many of these groups have gathered, and they love what he's doing. They love that he is taking this, you know, making this big splash against the president and against these mask mandates. But, you know, at what cost? And the cost, realistically, is children's lives and their families' lives, as we all know. And our hearts go out to the family and everyone who is mourning the 16-year-old with no underlying health conditions who died of COVID just yesterday in Jacksonville. I mean, there are going to be some very real heartbreaking stories, and it's just, we know that masks work and we know that vaccines work, and it's kind of a shame to see this become something political when really it's just about science.
We are seeing children die of COVID-19. Ben Becker, you know, as this political rhetoric flies back and forth, I think, yeah, we do need to keep our eye on the ball, which is that our hospitals are overflowing. Our healthcare workers are at their breaking point. They're having to put patients in hallways and conference rooms. We're just hearing incredible tales out of our local hospitals. And, you know, you have to feel, especially for parents of young children, children who aren't old enough to be vaccinated, kids under 12, who are going into school districts where they worry that their child might be exposed and might get sick.
Melissa, I've talked to local healthcare workers and doctors, and you know, they are definitely worried and frightened with the situation currently. And you know, they want to speak out. They want to make themselves heard. A lot of them are critical of the policy of Governor Ron DeSantis. They're also concerned about Mayor Lenny Curry as well, as far as what he's been saying about masks. And you know, some of these guys have been contacting me, and what they say is this: they are afraid to say anything publicly that's critical that could impact their funding for projects they're involved in. They think their hands are tied. So while they will go out and encourage policy and things publicly, they will not be critical of the governor or the mayor in some of his positions, because they worry what the repercussions could be for things they're involved in, whether it's, and mostly it comes down to funding for particular projects they have.
Let's go to Fred Matthews, a panelist joining us now to add his two cents. Hi, Fred. Happy Friday.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Good to have you. You know, Fred, this is just I honestly, I'm almost to the point where I don't even know what to say anymore. You know, there's going to be a free vaccine event at Impact Church this Sunday. We want to point that out. Duval Virtual Instructional Academy is seeing explosive growth right now. They're up to almost 2,000 kids enrolled. Typically, they just have a few hundred. I can't tell you how many parents we've heard from here at WJCT in our newsroom who are just simply terrified about this state of affairs. And yes, kids are less likely to die of this disease or get seriously ill. But this Delta variant is particularly contagious, and we are seeing kids dying in local ICUs and getting seriously sick. So their concern, I think, is justified.
It is so. And for those who are still hanging on to the myth that young people get less sick and they don't die, just take heed to the release by Baptist the other day, just yesterday, of the 16-year-old that passed away. And I understand that his parents are still ill with this mm-hmm. Delta variant. So it is striking at everybody at this point. It is truly a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I stopped by my local Walgreens yesterday and checked with the management, and they're saying that they have a steady stream now of persons who are coming in to get vaccinated. In fact, while I was there, there was a couple of young men who were going behind the curtain to get their shot. Mm. So a number of people are getting the word, but there is still a group out there that hangs on to this "I'm not going to be injected with the chip" myth, and I don't want to be practiced on. But we're past that now, and all of our politicians, from the governor on down, and particularly the governor, needs to be on board with a single message and stop with this political gamesmanship, because if they're going to get there in 2024, he's going to get there in 2024. But this is not the way to ride on the backs and lives of his citizens who he purports to represent.
I want to read a little bit of a Facebook post from a nurse at Baptist here in Jacksonville. He posted yesterday. It's a long post, folks, so I'm just going to read part of it. But he writes, "How bad are things now? I went into work this week to find 38 admitted patients in a 33-bed ER. They're holding there because there are no beds upstairs. Everyone is being seen in hallways, in chairs, in the cardiac lab, or anywhere we can find room to see them. People are waiting up to 12 hours, some with real emergencies. Over half the patients in the entire hospital, in our hospital, are here for complications of COVID. At another hospital, it's 80%. Some people are waiting in the ER for 2 and 3 days for a bed upstairs." He goes on to say there have been over 1,000 COVID admissions in this one hospital since this surge began just a few weeks ago. All elective surgeries and procedures have been canceled, and it's getting worse every day. So, you know, folks, these are unvaccinated people that are coming in and straining the hospitals to their breaking point. These healthcare workers are begging and pleading with you to get vaccinated. It's not only the best way to protect yourself and your loved ones, it is the only way we are ever going to get out of this misery. And frankly, the anger and the frustration that we're seeing from healthcare workers having to treat people who refuse to get vaccinated and come in and realize too late that they should have been vaccinated, you can really understand, honestly, why doctors and nurses are so traumatized and angry, because just imagine what it's like in their hospitals right now. Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Heather in St. John's County. Hello, Heather. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
I thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to let your listeners know that we are a group of parents and a group of doctors and medical experts that are going to show up on Tuesday morning at the St. John's County School Board meeting. We are going to rally at 8 a.m. ahead of time on August 10th. The meeting starts at 9, and there'll be public commentary at the end of the meeting where each speaker will get 3 minutes. And we're encouraging members of our medical community to show up in their white coats or scrubs. Masks are required, of course. We know that there's going to be opposition there, and we believe it's very important that our medical experts overshadow the opposition, who have no credentials. We want our voices heard. We want our doctors to be heard. And right now, the school board is sticking to the executive order, which I guess we've discovered does not really have a legal standing.
And so you're saying you want Duval County Public Schools to mandate masks for kids in the same way Duval has done?
Oh, St. John's County Public Schools.
Excuse me, St. John's Public Schools. And so would you ask that? You're simply asking them to discuss it. It's not even on the agenda. You're not saying pass it.
Correct.
You're saying just discuss it.
We've been asking for them to add it to the agenda. That they're telling us that the agenda has already been set and it's been printed, and so it will not be on the agenda. They're telling us that we are able to have our doctors speak at public commentary, and that our doctors can send their recommendations through email, which they have done over and over and over again. I'm hearing from pediatricians in the community. I'm hearing from medical leaders, and nothing's changing, and hiding behind this executive order is putting our kids at risk. We have members of a group, it's doctors and community members for masks in St. John's County, that are both Republicans and Democrats, and they are extremely concerned. This is not a political issue. This is a health and safety issue, and it's also an education issue. How disruptive is the school year going to be? If, you know, we had quarantine last year when kids were wearing masks, can you imagine how many quarantines we're going to have this year when they're not wearing masks, or when most are not wearing masks?
Heather,
that will be the case.
Heather, thanks for the call, and we will follow up next week to see what happens at that meeting in St. John's County. It's my understanding you also have a petition at change.org with thousands of signatures about this too. So Heather, thanks for that call.
Thank you.
Okay. At Nate Monroe, some parents also showed up to the school board meeting in Clay County this week. It's my understanding, asking for this issue to be put on the agenda there. I don't think they did so. But clearly, parents in surrounding counties around Duval are watching what happened here in Jacksonville and seeing how effective the activism was, and trying to pull off the same thing. But those counties are very different demographically. They have a very different makeup on their school boards. And that is going to be a problem for those parents and those teachers who would like to see this done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I'd venture to say that there's probably a greater chance of St. John's County doing some sort of quasi-mandate than Clay County. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, to kind of circle back to the beginning of the conversation, if this voucher scheme is the extent of what the governor is able to do, the one thing that school boards will be able to take some comfort in is that there's not really going to be any penalty if they do implement a mask mandate. I mean, that rule is, you know, just kind of meaningless. So school boards, you know, the idea that they're going to get funding taken away, I mean, again, unless something changes in the next, you know, 5 or 6 hours, school boards ought to just do what they want.
Jennifer on the South Side. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, full disclosure, I don't have any children, but if I had a child in the Duval County Public Schools, I don't think that the Duval County School Board went far enough by allowing parents to opt out. I don't think that they should be given that opportunity. Your child doesn't get to endanger my child. I also wanted to say that I don't think that parents who want to opt out should be allowed to use vouchers that have been set aside for students that have been bullied. I think that is a misuse of public funds.
Jennifer.
I don't think that being required to wear a mask and being bullied are equivalents.
Thank you, Jennifer. What about this Claire Goforth? The governor had said that he opposes masking kids because he feels that takes away the fun of school for them, that they need to breathe free. Those were some of the comments he made. And now with this potential move to give parents Hope Scholarship vouchers, what they're essentially doing, as she pointed out, is they're equating mask wearing with being bullied in school.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it. I would wager to say that you're going to be more likely to be bullied because you're wearing a mask, not because you're not wearing one. And this is just more of the trend that we see from Florida representatives, particularly Republicans, to take state dollars away from public schools and pour it into private schools. I believe the first I heard of this was the other day. Representative Randy Fine had made this suggestion to someone because he was calling for a special session to ban mask mandates. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where this idea originated. It's going to be more of this political back and forth. And, you know, I think that we should mention here that our governor is very clearly running for the Republican presidential ticket in 2024. He was in Michigan the other day fundraising. I'm told that he raised hundreds of thousands, possibly even $1 million on Monday in the middle of a huge surge in which we have our hospitals inundated and record-breaking numbers of COVID infections. Floridians are dying. And meanwhile, he's making comments about the border. You know, what kind of priorities does that say about Governor DeSantis?
You know, we have emails about that, Claire. Here's one from a supporter of the governor. He emails the show. Giving parents the final decision is reasonable. The governor is correct. It's too bad the Biden administration doesn't give similar choices to state governments and in whether to allow unvaccinated and even COVID positive illegals coming through the border that are getting sent all over the country. Okay. Ben Becker, Action News Jax. What about this? The governor going to the border to draw attention to border issues, going to Michigan to raise money in the midst of this health crisis in Florida. But again, as we see here from listeners, there are plenty of Republicans out there who are strongly in favor of the way the governor is managing this pandemic.
Well, Melissa, it of course raises questions about what his priority is. Is his priority the COVID crisis in Florida, or is his priority fundraising for a possible run for president? And that's something people will have to look at and make a decision for themselves as to what he's focused on, and trying to make comparisons between the border situation and somehow that's impacting COVID in Florida. Also, I like to add that, you know, we talk about, you know, home rule often, and what happened to home rule in this situation? You know, the counties are supposed to be able to make their own decisions on things. School boards are supposed to make their own decisions on things. What I'd like to know is, in this whole situation, where's city council been? City council has been virtually quiet this entire time.
With the exception of Brenda Priestley Jackson, who came to the school board meeting.
Other than her, I haven't heard a peep from anybody. So I'd like to know, where are they? Where do they stand in all this? Because they're supposed to be representatives of the community, and the community is being threatened with being defunded of education dollars. Well, I would think the city council would somehow, some way, come out and say something about this. And other than Brenda, I haven't heard a word.
What about that? Fred Matthews.
Well, there's virtually nothing for the city council to do. That's true. There's nothing they can do.
But this is an opportunity for them to make their voices heard about.
Well, they can speak out on the issue, and we've got all kinds of voices doing that. But in terms of getting an action done, the action comes from the top. And remember now, the two leaders of the city council are both Republicans, and they're both at-large members. They have to be somewhat in line with what the talking points are from the top. And that is part of the issue. So it's not surprising that you would hear from a Brenda Priestley Jackson who doesn't have that allegiance. But for the most part, our council is in line with the instructions, with the talking points that they're getting from the top. And the talking points that they're getting from the top are exactly what we've been talking about on this show. So they're not that. The school board is in a different position altogether. Number one, supposedly they're nonpartisan, so they have something, and they're being led by a non-elected leader who is indeed looking at the best interests of the students and faculty in deference to just having to have all these political concerns up top. So it's not unusual, not surprising that we don't hear anything from the city council. I mean, this is not that kind of fight. And besides that, Jacksonville has proven itself to be more progressive than our surrounding counties have been. And that's what we're seeing here in terms of what's taking place with mask mandates and the ability. You already have that ability here in Duval County to wear your mask if you want to or not. But businesses are saying you're going to wear a mask when you come in here until you get to your table. And businesses are saying if you want to stay employed here, you're going to get a shot, or else you're going to have to go through A, B, and C courses and tell us why you can't get the shot. That's what's already happening in spite of the political exercising being done in our state government.
Nate Monroe, let's talk about the mayor for a minute, too, and his role in all of this. He did institute a mask mandate early on in the pandemic. He says he's not going to bring it back. He is encouraging vaccinations. When the governor had a very light schedule the other day, it was published, and then we later found out he spent most of his day Monday raising money in Michigan. But one of the few items on his schedule was a call with Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry. So that gives you an idea of how Mayor Curry is leading a city that is at the national epicenter of this surge of a deadly virus, trying to keep his residents safe and alive. At the same time, it seems, he's trying not to get crosswise with a governor who's hostile to mask mandates and has been lukewarm at best in recent months on pushing vaccinations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the mayor is definitely in a bit of an awkward position. I think that he has generally gotten decent reviews with good reason for his handling of COVID. Now, maybe more recently, you know, he's kind of echoed some of the governor's talking points about mandates, which has seemed a little bit out of character. But yeah, he's definitely in an awkward position. I mean, if I had to, this is just me speculating, no one told me this, but I mean, if I had to guess, I would bet that the mayor's office would kind of prefer the governor to just like not keep visiting Jacksonville and dragging the mayor into these news conferences. I mean, I think it just kind of puts him in this impossible position. Like, of course, he was going to be asked about the school board's mask policy. And, you know, he walked a careful line, didn't really criticize the school board, but didn't endorse any sort of mandate either.
Lots of emails. Denise emails the show. What is the big deal? Masking saves lives. Mask it or casket. Mark emails the show. You say there is no teacher who believes there is harm to small children when masking them for 7 to 8 hours a day. They are out there. I am a parent of a 7-year-old. To have someone refer to me as the far right because I've seen firsthand the filthy masks and tears of kids forced to wear them? Have you missed the numerous stories of kids being less willing to speak up about issues at home because they are masked? Thanks for that perspective, Mark. Roland in Fernandina Beach. Hi, Roland. Go ahead. Hi, Roland. Are you still on the air? You still there? Okay, Roland, we'll try you back. Mia in Murray Hill. Hey, Mia, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to mention that I manage a team of call center agents, and I can't say a lot much more than it's actually agents who take unemployment calls to assist with that. And my own team, this past school year had an absolutely horrible time trying to keep up with just the sheer absences, primarily due to their children getting sick. So that has, and then they get the parents sick. And then you can get COVID more than once.
Right.
So while, yes, the adults can be vaccinated, the children cannot. So if we really want to work on the whole unemployment thing too, I think some different decisions need to be made. That's all I have to say.
Well, wait a minute, Mia. So what are your thoughts about everything that's going on right now, this week, all around town?
I mean, honestly, it's really frustrating. I kind of, for the most part, accept things the way they are. I do feel a bit like an ant in the ant form.
yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah.
It's a bit upsetting, honestly. I cannot believe the utter lack of just, honestly, consideration for human life, other than oneself.
Thank you, Mia. Thanks so much. Claire Goforth, let's talk about this because cases and hospitalizations are breaking records. Hospitals are activating surge plans. On Thursday, the state hit another all-time high for COVID hospitalizations, 12,888. And as we mentioned, we did see a 16-year-old die of COVID-19 in our area. There are a number of kids in local ICUs. But going beyond Jacksonville, Florida leads the nation now in pediatric hospitalizations for COVID-19. So as we talk about schools and masks, we also need to talk about the fact that more and more kids in this state are getting sick from this virus than any other state.
Are not eligible for the vaccine, and they may not be for several months at this point. So as they go to school, they're all at risk of catching COVID and having a serious case. And it's been really interesting to hear the governor plead his case that he's done this great job handling the pandemic by keeping Florida open and, you know, freedom and all of that, when really what we're experiencing now is the freedom to die, the freedom to get terribly sick, the freedom to infect our fellow man, including children. And, you know, I'm having a hard time understanding how that can possibly be framed as a success, because you can go to a grocery store or attend a class without a mask on. It's mind-boggling. And it's really, you know, I try to be empathetic. I think we all do. And I speak as someone who's vaccinated, who got vaccinated as soon as I could. And it was a very easy process, almost no side effects whatsoever. I think that we're getting quite frustrated with the unvaccinated. Even sometimes when they get sick, you think to yourself, wow, I mean, but you didn't have to get sick. But kids don't have that choice. And it's a shame to see top leadership kind of say out of one side of their mouth, well, you know, I've been saying get vaccinated, but out of the other one start, you know, as the governor has done, sell things that fire Dr. Fauci and, you know, save Florida from Fauciism, which, I mean, Dr. Fauci has been one of the strongest voices promoting vaccines and social distancing and masks. So, I mean, we are in a bad situation in Florida, and it's not going to get better unless we see some really clear changes. It's a good thing that we're seeing more people getting vaccinated, because they're terrified, and they should be terrified.
That is the silver lining. Vaccination rates are going up again in Florida. Thank goodness for that. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Nate Monroe, Fred Matthews, Claire Goforth, Ben Becker, and yours truly. 549-2937. Ben Becker, Baptist Health, just tweeted this out a minute ago. Their COVID update for the day, 560 COVID patients in their health system, 102 in the ICU. 12 of these patients are at Wolfson Children's Hospital, with 3 of those 12 in the ICU. We admitted 84 new COVID-19 positive patients yesterday. 3 were kids. So, Ben, you've been following the surges at local hospitals as they are strained to the edges of their capacity to treat these patients, including at Mayo Clinic and others. So seeing these grim tweets come out, Ben, from hospitals like Baptist, and seeing that they're admitting more and more kids, it's what can you say at this point? This is a tragic situation.
Well, help me out, Melissa. What policy has been enacted by anybody to help these hospitals?
Right.
Has anybody proposed any kind of policy, anything from the state level, from the federal level, from the local level that's helping these hospitals?
I'm so glad you brought that up because the governor won't declare an emergency, so they cannot draw down additional resources like federal reimbursements for this. Thank you. Go on.
Yeah. So the hospitals are on their own. Okay. So I think with Baptist, they had to open up beds in a basement. I think as UF Health, who's moving beds across the street to some other facility. So the hospitals are just kind of shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic and hope they don't sink.
You know,
it's a horrible situation.
Somebody earlier said, where's the city council on this? Council member Garrett Dennis has proposed legislation to provide funding to local hospitals to get exactly what Ben is talking about. So Fred Matthew,
I believe his was $5 million for COVID testing.
For testing.
At three different locations. Yes, at three different locations, which is admirable. They'll help with the testing, but it's not going to address the crisis at the hospitals. And at this point, the hospitals, again, are sinking fast. You go in there, if you have a car crash or something, I assume they could see you. If you have COVID, you're being shuffled off to some other part of the hospital. The hospitals aren't designed to function like this. When we have 100% capacity and more at local hospitals, that is dangerous. And I don't think, while we talk about the numbers, where's the action from our leaders? And that's the big question.
There is more that city leadership could be doing, Fred Matthews, to provide some relief to our hospital systems. And as Ben pointed out, if you have another health problem, the last place you want to be right now is a local ER. Good luck to you if you come in with a broken ankle or heart palpitations or you name it. You're not going to get seen, not for a long time, because they are strained to the breaking point caring for COVID patients, Fred.
Well, this harkens back to a year ago, doesn't it, when we didn't have a vaccine available and the hospitals were moving toward their breaking point and were already at it and no one had a solution as to how to help them. I don't think that anything was necessarily proposed in the mayor's roundtable with the hospital CEOs earlier this week about this. It would certainly be helpful, but the problem that they are facing right now is that they don't have an idea. They know it's going to get worse in the next few weeks because of all of the major events that we have scheduled now that are on the concert season. As a result of the concert we had just a week or so ago and the ones that are coming up that are live. So they know it's going to get worse, but there's no proposal out there to assist the hospitals in this. And quite frankly, I don't think the hospitals have an ask that they can make aside from more money to do it. But the problem with more money is that they still don't have any place to take care of the amount of patients that they're expecting, because they're not really sure about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be worse, but they just don't know what to expect that's coming up here. And they're asking the same thing over and over again. Please get vaccinated so we can lower this issue. And many folks are answering the call, but many others simply are too late in answering.
Carolina on the South Side. Hi, Carolina. Go ahead, Carolina. Turn your radio down and go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much. I appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I feel so exasperated because I wanted to share an anecdote, something that happened in my office the other day. We had a non-COVID-related respiratory distress. I pulled out a treatment. We took care of her in the car because I don't want sick people in the office. Pulled out a treatment, pulled out some oxygen. We ran out of oxygen. I had to send that child to the hospital with no non-COVID related problems, who is a high risk. Mm-hmm. And we were both hysterical, actually. We were both very upset to have to send her to the emergency room because we know she's probably going to get exposed. But the worst of it is when I called to get my tank refilled, the company said that they were not refilling tanks for private offices because they were running out and they were saving it for the hospital. So this is important. This is third world stuff. And
yeah, so not enough oxygen
here.
Not enough oxygen. Yeah, go ahead.
And the mayor. I challenge the city council, the mayor, and our governor to sit in one of our emergency rooms for 15 minutes without their mask and see how comfortable they feel after that time, because this is what we're dealing with. And it's just exasperating. We are frustrated. We're angry. We're upset. We're scared. And we're running out of supplies and people to work. So what is the solution? We've tried every solution we know, and we're still serving the community. What happens when we die or when we're sick?
Or when you quit. When you say you can't do it anymore. Yeah. Carolina, thanks for all you're doing. And I'm so sorry. And I can't thank you enough for sharing that. That gives people a sense of how bad it is. Thank you, Carolina. We have another call from an ICU nurse. It's Clark in Clay County. Clark, how are you? Go ahead.
I'm good. I would like to echo the last caller's sentiment. We don't have, the normal ratio for an ICU nurse is two patients to one nurse. And sometimes, depending on the sickness of the patient, how critically ill they are, that's a tough ask. And we're stretched to it. You know, everyone's tripled. We don't have enough equipment. We don't have enough staff. So the quality of care suffers. And if, you know, we've got people in ICU nurses, if there's a room with a monitor on it, there's a COVID patient in there. If it's a closet and you got a monitor in there, there's a patient in the closet. I mean, I'm being sarcastic, but it's ridiculous. And if the governor wants to enact policies and things, he could enact a policy like something like the Good Samaritan law that protects all these doctors and nurses from any future suit, because you didn't get the care you should have got, because you're putting us in a position it's undoable.
Clark, I'm so sorry.
Care suffers.
I my hat is off to you and all of your colleagues. You are saving lives and you're on the front lines of this, and I know it's got to be so tough. So thank you for the call.
Yeah, and it's terrifying to think what's going to happen when you have a bunch of kids go to school together and then come home to their moms and dads and grandparents also.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Here's an email from Jack, Jack Webb, former city councilman. He emails the show and says, "This situation is mind-boggling. Has anyone truly considered the consequences of sending unvaccinated kids into schools with an aggressively mutating virus lurking in the halls? Has anyone considered the ramifications of a COVID wildfire starting in the next 7 to 10 days?" Nate Monroe, that's the larger point. You know, folks are emailing us saying, well, kids aren't likely to die of COVID. Well, that's mostly true. However, there is an indirect impact on the entire community with this contagious variant when you put a bunch of unvaccinated bodies into close quarters together day after day after day without masks.
Yeah, I mean, I share the frustration that I think a lot of people have. To the extent there's like a debate about the danger of COVID, it's very much this like don't believe your lying eyes kind of thing. You know, data is abstract and it's complicated and it's easy to obfuscate. And so, you know, the governor's office engages in this sort of game where they try to cherry pick data to downplay the severity of COVID and to make even our present situation seem sort of not as dire as it is. And you know, we're kind of being asked to discount the voices of all these healthcare leaders and folks in the trenches that are, you know, sharing like really alarming anecdotes. And that includes about, you know, kids. So it is very frustrating that, you know, there is just this, there is an element of our political discourse that is just hell bent on downplaying COVID. Yeah. And sadly, we're living with that in Florida at kind of the highest levels.
Here's an email from a listener. "We've heard about mask or non-mask shaming and ridicule. How about this? I am being shamed and ridiculed by friends out of state for living here in Florida." Ben Becker, you know, a previous caller referred to this as being like a third world country. It is a really sad time to be living in this state.
Well, it shouldn't be a situation where you think you can't go to the hospital for a common procedure or an injury because they're overrun with COVID patients. I want to get back to something from earlier where I believe it was an email. You mentioned a caller was saying something along the lines of children crying or being upset and wearing dirty masks, that somehow, you know, it's hurting their learning process, that they feel like it's something it's so awful. You know, I have a 6 and 9 year old, and not one time have they ever complained about wearing a mask. And that's pretty hard to believe. A 6 and 9, they complain about a lot of things, but a mask, they've usually not have any issues with it. I take them to the bus stop last year. All the kids wearing masks. Matter of fact, the kids are doing a better job wearing masks than the adults were. All the kids at the bus stop would be wearing masks. All the adults weren't. So the idea that somehow kids are going to have trouble with this, or impacts their learning, or, you know, they're not on board with it, or some cause some sort of scarring in their mind for the rest of their life, is to me ridiculous.
One thing I've noticed is the kids do take their cues from parents. If parents treat mask wearing as just a simple thing we've got to do right now, the kids follow suit. If parents treat it as a terrible infringement on their liberties, well, the kids will absorb that too. Okay, we are out of time. And I want to thank you all so much for being with us in this extraordinary time. Fred Matthews, Ben Becker, Nate Monroe, Claire Goforth, be safe, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you.
In a moment, we'll continue our culinary tour through the First Coast, celebrating restaurants that are surviving and thriving, even in this time. That's next. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
New York's governor hangs on.
That is just not who I am.
But pressure mounts on him to go.
I think he should resign.
Also, the CDC intervenes on a lapsed eviction moratorium and what two racists in Ohio might tell us about the political direction of both parties. More on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. There's a new pizzeria on Mayport Road in Atlantic Beach. It's just opened up and it's located inside a popular craft brewery. Eric Lumen is the co-owner of Rev Brewing and the new Bones Pizza, and he's on the line. Eric, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, congrats on the new opening, especially right now.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much. It's been a long project, but we're pretty excited to get it going.
I'm sure. Now, you've had the brewery for quite some time. What made you decide to also start serving up some pizzas with it?
Yeah. We've had the brewery for almost 3 years now. We just kind of always wanted to do a food aspect of it. If anybody's ever been in here, we were kind of shoehorned into a very tiny, tiny spot. So the goal is to grow that spot and get a little more seating area and kind of, you know, give people a reason to stay longer and be a little more family friendly, you know, not just be a bar. I mean, craft breweries are more family friendly than the traditional bar, but it's still a bar in premise. So bringing that food side in really opens up to the family friendly aspect.
Neapolitan style pizzas, wood fired oven. This sounds pretty old school and pretty delicious.
Yeah, it's been fun. The pizzas are definitely rooted in that Neapolitan style. I wouldn't say they're super traditional style, but that is definitely the backbone of them. And we're cooking in a wood fire only 900 degree oven.
Now, we try to drop in on restaurants, locally owned restaurants on this show as much as we can, because the restaurant sector has taken such a beating in this pandemic, and we want to try to support local restaurateurs. What's been the hardest thing for you throughout the last year and a half?
It's really been more of the unknown. We just, you know, it was kind of a day by day. We didn't know what was going to happen, especially in the early part when we went through the shutdown. And there was kind of this constantly changing set of rules that we abided by. It was just kind of a high stress, just trying to figure out what works and how to do it safely and how to make people comfortable to still come in here. And was not our normal kind of day to day, you know, what we work on. So that was kind of the hardest thing. We have a really great community of you know, regulars here and everything that supported us amazingly through the shutdowns with to-go beer and then stuff like that. While we definitely didn't set any records last year, we maintained pretty well. Mm-hmm. We were able to keep all of our staff on and keep them paid. And so other than that, it wasn't that bad, thankfully.
That's good. And so I would think that the problem now maybe you and many others are having is just finding people to work. But federal unemployment benefits are phasing out, so maybe more people are ready to come back and work in restaurants like yours.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. You know, I've seen, you know, basically nothing but we're hiring and bad staffing issues across the whole industry. We are lucky to have a pretty tight staff already here. And then we had a bunch of people kind of ready to work here just whenever we were ready. So we basically had it fully staffed before it was opened. We didn't have to do any kind of general hiring. It was all kind of people we'd already known and were ready to bring in as soon as we could. So we kind of got lucky on that aspect where we didn't really struggle to get this place fully staffed up. And we went from a bar that took one person to run, but now we run 4, 5, 6 at a time with the restaurant and everything. But we got real lucky with that.
That's great. And given that this variant is back, how are you as a restaurant owner dealing with that? COVID protocols for your staff and for your diners?
Yeah, so we definitely still have the hand sanitizing stations out. We're definitely still sanitizing every table in between use, menus in between use, and high contact points. At that point, that's kind of where we've ended right now. We have seen a major upswing in mask wearing with our customers coming in, which has been great. We definitely appreciate that. But we're kind of again playing it day by day and just seeing what happens.
You know, for people that have locked down essentially for a long time and they're starting to venture back out again, you know, people do miss just going out to eat. And certainly we have to be careful. But at the same time, I think people really do crave that. And you providing a new option along Mayport Road, what are you hearing from the neighbors and the military guys and women out there about this?
Yeah, so far the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. It's been really rewarding. We're going through much more pizza than we had ever imagined already. We've already brought in a bigger mixer and more staff and are upping the amount we can do. And we're even with the expansion, we're still a small space. So storage is always an issue for dough and stuff like that. It takes up a lot of space, but yeah, the reaction has been great. So it's more than we imagined.
Well, I'm congratulations. And let's give the hours for the pizza. You do have some outside seating. Pizza served Wednesday through Friday, 2 to 9 PM. Saturdays, noon to 9, Sundays, 12 to 8, the new Bones Pizza on Mayport Road, 1237 Mayport Road, Atlantic Beach, right inside Eric's already very popular craft brewery. You can get some cans or growlers to go along with your pizza. So congrats, Eric. It sounds pretty tasty, and have fun with it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, appreciate it.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. She plans on enjoying a beer slushy and a pizza at Bones tonight. Also, rounding out our amazing staff, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, with technical help from Isabella Da Silva. Our editorial director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup. It's our live statewide call-in show where we round up the biggest stories across the Sunshine State from the peninsula to the panhandle. We'll look at what's going on with masks and schools at a statewide level today at noon. Join us then and catch our podcast up later today on all platforms, including the WJCT app. We say it every day on this show. We're going to say it again. Mask up and go get vaccinated. You are not only helping yourself and your loved ones, but this community, and you are respecting the sacrifice of healthcare workers in this city who are being strained right now to the absolute breaking point, caring for unvaccinated patients. Don't be the next one. Get vaccinated. I'm Melissa Ross. Be safe.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.